This is the Miguel Show Uncensored.
Jeez. Ow.
The prologues.
I wasn't ready.
I wasn't either.
Y'all need to get ready. Well, girl, we got stuff to do, honey. What does this look like?
A hooja kooja? Yeah.
My name is Miguel Fuller.
I'm Holly O'Connor.
I am producer Jared.
And we make up the Miguel Show weekday mornings on the new Hot 101.5. All the hits, fewer commercials. And so we decided a couple of weeks ago that we would do sort of our origin stories, which Holly stole this idea from. Let's give credit where it's due.
I did. I straight up ganked it from the Open Table podcast.
Table.
Oh, I'm sorry. What am I talking about?
What
I'm
is
sick.
It called?
You have to give me a pass.
Isn't the Open Table an app?
Yes. That's where you book restaurant reservations. I'm sick, y'all. Do
oh,
not.
Dear.
Like, okay, the crowded table, yeah. Which there's only three of them, so I'm not sure how crowded it really is.
They're bigger dudes.
Maybe it's a small table. It's like a kid's table.
They're
where
tall.
They sit.
They're all of them tall, so maybe that's why it's crowded.
Their knees touch. That's kind of sexual. Oh. Tickle my knee, please.
Anyway, if you want to find them, definitely search out The Crowded Table.
Yes.
Because it is Dennis and Jake and John Senning. I feel like you have to say John Senning's whole name.
You do.
And they have a really great podcast. But anyway, this is where I got the idea from to do Origins. And that's what they're calling it. But we call ours Prologues because Miguel came with that and I liked it better.
Yes,
so,
we like books. So
we do.
Last week we did me, where I told you a lot about myself and even cried a little bit.
It was a lot, Miguel, and I thought it was so brave and so great. I actually texted one of the guys from the Crowded Table, and I was like, "Please listen to Miguel's prologue, and thank you for the idea because I loved it."
Did they listen?
I don't know. He never got back to me. He said he would listen, and then he didn't.
Probably not.
Say anything. He probably didn't.
F him.
That's right.
So producer Jared, you are up today with sort of origin story, and basically we want to know what made you Jared Day.
Yeah.
Okay.
What experiences that you've gone through in your life that contributed into making you the person that you are today?
Well, I got a whole sheet here because I did what you did. I wrote some notes about myself, so I remember what to talk about.
Good.
But I'm probably going to need you guys' help a little bit on this.
Okay.
Like, just asking me a couple questions and stuff.
Of course.
Because I don't even know how to start this. Like,
well, I want to know, because I know that you grew up, you went to high school here.
I did.
In Tampa Bay, but you also are from Atlanta.
Okay, yeah, it's actually a good place to start.
Where does your story begin?
Yeah.
My story begins in New York.
Oh, okay.
Right. Because you used to listen to BLI, didn't you, in New York?
Oh, yeah, which I'll get to that. Like, I was born in New York, right around the corner from BLI.
And that's our sister station on Long Island.
Yeah, which is exactly like Hot for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I only spent like probably about a year or two there, and I eventually moved to Georgia, where I claim that I'm from, because I mean that's where pretty much most of my story actually begins.
And
outside of being like a baby,
what part of Georgia, Atlanta, did you grow up in?
I grew up in the north side of Atlanta,
the white side.
It was
the rich side.
This is Jared's prologue. Do not judge him
I'm not judging.
But the thing is, like, I'm not going to say that.
Exactly. He told me to ask questions and help, so
okay,
that's what I do.
That's fine. You said the white side, but then you followed it up with,
Listen.
That was unnecessary.
Listen, that's what comes along with this, being here.
That actually is what happens when you say where you're from.
Well, so you were from the white side.
I was, yeah. I grew up on a lake. We had tons of boats and all this other stuff. So.
Who had all the money in your family? Like, who was the moneymaker?
That would be my uncle. And, like, that was the reason we moved down to Georgia from, like, living in New York. My dad took a job with him, and we stayed on, his property that he had, because he had, like, a huge amount of property, and he had, like, a bunch of stuff. So we just stayed there. That's where I was until my parents got divorced.
What sort of business was this?
It was, machinery moving.
Okay.
So, like, they were just taking stuff from, like, factories at one place, bringing it to somewhere else. So.
Okay. Now, because you're Puerto Rican.
I am.
Now, I'm assuming, like, are there any other ethnicities in your family, or was this, like, a bunch of Puerto Ricans living in a huge house on a lake?
No, it's just a bunch of white dudes.
Bunch of white dudes?
Yeah, that's just how it was. Now, my mom's side of the family is Puerto Rican. My dad is Filipino and Irish. So,
wow, okay. Yeah. So you've got a lot of ethnicity in you.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. And so in this uncle's house, how many people live there?
It was, like, my dad, my uncle, and I think like his girlfriend, like one other person there.
Okay.
And I mean, it was a huge house. So.
Wow. And how long did you live there for?
Oh, we were there for a little while, and my parents separated. My dad stayed there. My mom just kind of we moved around a lot. It was kind of what happened after their divorce, and it was not a very amicable split, you could say. And that has a lot to do with like who I am, because my mom is nuts. Like that's an easy way to put it.
So you got stuck with the parent that was crazy.
I did for a long time. And we just bounced around from place to place. And eventually, when I got older, I was probably like six or so. I moved up. I went with my dad for the summer, and he was moving back up to New York. And I was only going to go there for the summer, and that turned into like 4 years.
Oh.
That you stayed with your dad.
That I stayed with my dad because of like legal issues and.
Okay, let's go back a little bit.
Sure.
Why did your parents split?
My dad was always on the road, so it was just, I guess, I don't know if there was another reason beyond that, but that's one of the things that like I always remember, and like I remember it's really awkward and sad. My dad always being on the road. I remember I would just sit by the window all the time when I was a small child and be like, "Is he coming back? Like, what's going on here?"
Yeah.
Like, and that had a lot to do with it. And I know there's some awkward stuff. I guess other people that might have got involved on both ends, but that's kind
of. Do you have recollections of your mom like dating other men when she was still married to your dad?
Not at all. Not that I remember.
But do you remember your dad being with other women?
I never really saw my dad a ton when my parents were together, because he was on the road every single week. So,
oh, wow. So
yeah.
He was literally gone all the time.
He was gone all the time. Yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters, or are you the only child?
I have a stepsister.
That is whose?
On my mom's side.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Now is she older or younger?
She's a lot younger.
Okay, so this is after all of this
has
happened.
Yeah, this is way after, yeah.
Okay, so now when you say that your mom was crazy, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, and that kind of gets me back to like when I moved to New York. Like, my mom had some, I guess, legal issues where she got in trouble with the law for, like, I think it might have been like drunk driving or something like that.
And she was still in Atlanta?
Yeah, she was still in Atlanta. Okay. We were up in New York where I was only there for like the summer. And it turned into, you know what, we're just going to kind of keep you here. It's a better situation for you. And that kind of turned into my mom going, "I was kidnapped," and all this other stuff. Yeah. I'm looking at Holly's face, and that's the same face everybody else has. It's
a look of, like, WTF.
What?
Exactly.
Your mom said that you were kidnapped?
Yeah, my mom would just constantly, like, even say to me that I was kidnapped. My dad was brainwashing me with, like, that I'm about not coming back there and stuff like that. And eventually, it grew to a lot of animosity towards her, which I still have today. I mean,
because she said that you were kidnapped.
Yeah, I mean, she, I understand, I guess, when you have your child kind of sort of taken from you.
Right.
You're going to think that way. And it never really went that well.
Yeah.
When your mom says, when she said that you were brainwashed, was she saying that your dad was just brainwashing you from liking her, or was there?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. From liking her and being there and all these other things. It was
at the time.
Awkward.
At the time, did your dad say anything about your mom, good or bad, or?
No. I mean, to my dad, to this day, even still goes, "Yeah, she's nuts, but I love her because you're in this world, not for anything that happened beforehand or anything like that."
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, looking back on it, now that you have some perspective on the situation,
sure.
Because normally in that sort of case, I feel like Holly, if you, because you and your ex-husband share custody of your daughter, Maya, and let's just say some crazy stuff happened and we lost this job and we had to move to, you know, Washington State or Seattle.
Sure.
You know, like, there would have to be legal documents drawn up for you to be able to take your daughter, right?
Yes.
So you couldn't just be like, "All right, we're moving to Seattle, bye."
No, it would have to be discussed from both parties.
So, Jared, from your, so now looking back as an adult,
yes,
and knowing that, could you see how your mom would think you were kidnapped? Because was there any legal documents drawn up, or?
There was not that I know of. I mean, I understand where she's coming from. Like I said, it's very difficult when like a child kind of leaves you. But she took things on into her own hands of just kind of losing it.
Yeah.
For
what
a little
do you
while.
Mean?
Where I mean, she was just very angry and very bitter, and I don't think she realized that I wasn't in the best situation with her, which I look back now. I mean, we lived We moved around from house to house constantly. Mm. Lived in trailer parks, lived in hotels. I mean, it was.
And she thought that was okay.
And she thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Because I was there with her.
Right.
So, I understand it, but at the same time, if I stayed in the situation I was in, I don't think I'd be where I am today.
Do you think that your mom has some sort of mental issues, or was she just emotionally damaged after the divorce?
I believe she has probably bipolar. I believe that's probably what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that throughout my life from then to now constantly comes up. And I mean, she doesn't even want to know. I mean, that's one of those things. She kind of lives in her bubble and doesn't want to be outside of that.
Where does she live now?
She lives in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. So you're in New York. You've
yes.
been there for 4 years. How old are you now?
I'm like 10 or 11 now, and I moved to, we moved to Las Vegas at this point.
Oh, so what made that move happen?
Well, my dad's career was always after moving machinery, was setting up trade shows, special events, and stuff like that. So moved to Las Vegas because that's where a lot of the stuff was. So we ended up there, mm-hmm. and I said to my dad, I remember this really vividly. We were sitting at an Olive Garden, because that is a fancy restaurant like we've talked about before.
Amen.
Get that unlimited breadsticks, girl, when it's graduation.
Olive Garden.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was loading up on free mints that you get when you pay the check.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my dad I wanted to see my mom for Christmas,
mm.
which probably is one of the worst decisions I ever made.
Oh.
He went, you know, that's cool. Let's do that. It's your mom. You haven't seen her. We're pretty far away at this point.
Yeah.
So I fly out there, and it was bad right from the start. It was bad from the moment I got on the plane, because I did not want to be there, because I was flying by myself. And then I remember probably about a half hour left in the flight, I get sick.
Oh, you have motion sickness, though,
don't
you?
I do have bad motion sickness.
Mm.
So I'm sitting there, I'm sick, I smell, the lady next to me is pissed off.
Oh, like, I would be this little pipsqueak kid is yeah. throwing up next to me.
Exactly. So,
did you at least puke in the bag?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, but like, still, like this was not a good trip already. Yeah.
Oh, I can smell the stench in my nose.
Yeah, exactly. I get off the plane, my mom is there, and there's this guy, and I don't know who this guy is.
Mm.
So we're there, she picks me up, she says his name's Tommy. I'm like, okay, cool. And we go back to where they live, and they had a cool house like in South Atlanta. I was like, all right, this is not what I was used to. Like, maybe she's done better for herself. And then I was there, supposed to be there only for a week. A week came, I never got on my flight home.
Why?
Pretty much her plan the entire time was, I'm not sending you back.
Oh, no.
I got you back here.
So she literally did kidnap you at that
yes.
point.
Yeah, because I was in school.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How old were you again?
Probably 11.
So you were in the sixth grade?
Yes.
So basically,
she enrolled you in school?
Yeah. After, like, I mean, there was probably a big battle between her and my dad, and I mean, he did. There were no legal papers ever.
How did she explain that to you as a sixth grader?
There was, and this is where it gets more awkward. It's like, she never said, hey, you're not going home. It was just, the day came, I knew I was supposed to be leaving, and I never left. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm here.
When the flight, like, did you know your flight information?
Yeah, I knew when I had it taken home.
Okay, so like that day, and she's not getting into the car to drive you to the airport, what do you say to her?
That's the thing. I don't remember exactly what I had said, but I knew, I just at that time I knew it was like, this isn't working out very well. And I had a best friend, or like a friend at the time, a kid named Billy, who I knew over this week. And I eventually, he eventually became like my best friend, like any kids do. That's the closest person to you.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about a month or so goes by, and he goes, yeah, your stepdad's pretty cool. And I'm like, who? They never told me that.
Had gotten married.
They never mentioned that they were married.
Oh, they were married.
They were. No one ever said anything
so
to me about
this. So you just thought there was just guy your mom was dating is just living at the house.
Yeah,
and
because that's what I was used to as a kid.
Wow. Right, that she was dating people.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. So your world is basically crumbling and then being put back together again.
Again,
with
yes.
your mom in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So how long does this last? And was it tumultuous while you were living with her during this time period?
It was. He didn't like me very much.
Tom, my stepdad?
My stepdad, which, I mean, we're better now. because of the fact that we realized we both don't like my mom.
Even he doesn't like your mom?
He doesn't like her either, and I'll get to that. That's an awkward story well.
Wow.
But yeah, every now and then, my dad eventually realized, hey, I'm too far away from my kid. I got to move back to Georgia, which he did. He got transferred back to Georgia with the company he was with, and I would see him on the weekends, and eventually, like, my grandparents moved from New York to here in Florida, in Tampa, and he went, okay, let me come down there, because my grandparents owned a couple properties. They sold a bunch of stuff there. Mm-hmm. Money was better there, so they were able to come down here and buy a lot of stuff. So he came down here, moved here, so I would go back and forth between Georgia and here in Tampa. And
interesting.
Yeah, and after a while, I did the same thing again. I was like, let me come down there, and let me say I'm going for the summer, mm-hmm. and guess what? Never came back again. That's just the story of how it keeps going.
Good like, Lord. I'm sorry. Can we go back really quick to like when your mom pulled a heist off and didn't put you on the plane? What did your dad do? Like, if that was me, my ass would have been like, where's my kid?
Well, I think at the time, I don't know if there was anything he really could do.
Oh, really?
Because like I said, there was never any paperwork on where I was supposed to be.
So nothing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because really, it's documented. Like, at that time, like, what could you can't call the police because he's with his mom.
Exactly. Right.
And it's not like they can say, well, I have custody, because if there's no paperwork, then there isn't.
Because
were your parents ever, they were legally married at one point.
Yeah, they were.
Okay. But I guess back then maybe things were more. I mean, Holly, when you get divorced and you have a kid, do you have to file custody agreement?
You have to put who's got.
And that was my mom at the time.
So it was your mom's custody, and you ended up with your dad.
I did.
Oh, I see.
And then she didn't really know how to fight that. She probably could have fought that.
But she was unstable.
If she wasn't crazy.
Yeah, she was unstable at the time. I mean, there's a lot of awkward stuff that happened between them, and I was just put in the middle a lot.
So, you could legally, but if he didn't have any legal rights, then
not really. I mean,
the law does favor the mother.
It does.
And it's not fair that it does that, but it does, because the general assumption is that the mother has the maternal instinct to take care of the kids. And like, just by whatever precedent is set, the majority of the time, the dad's like, I'll just let that handle that.
I'll just send you some money.
It's like human nature, and that's how the courts put it, is that the mom, unless there's some crazy stuff going on with the mom, which you can fight for if you're the dad, they give it to the mother.
Yeah, wow. And that's what happened. And then eventually I told my dad I wanted to come down here, and I came down here one bag of clothes, and I'm here to stay. And it's been like that since 2004 when I moved down here.
You never left?
No, I never left. I mean, I went to middle school, went to high school here, and
Okay, so how long were you in Atlanta with just your mom? From what age to what age?
I can't even.
Must not have been that long, because if you had middle school here too in Florida.
Well, I ended middle school here.
Okay, so you were probably 2 years in Atlanta with your mom.
I would say probably two, almost 3 years there.
Okay, and then you moved here.
And I moved here.
One bag of clothes.
Yep.
To live with your dad, and that's how it has been ever since.
Oh yeah, that's how I got to here. When I was in high school, we went back to Vegas. I was there for a couple months, and my dad realized this isn't working out, so we came back. Right back in the same high school, right back in the same neighborhood I lived in.
Was it during the school year that you left?
It was, yeah. And my dad realized that this wasn't the best move at the time, so we came
back. That is so crazy. Like, as I'm listening to your story, because my life, like, there are such clear lines of, like, when stuff happened.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that you're having a hard time remembering, because they moved you around so often.
They did.
That you're having a hard time remembering, like, where you were at certain times. I don't know, I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I have it written down here, and, like, only when I moved to Florida is the only part that has a date mark next to it.
Wow.
And the only reason it does is because something in sports that makes me go, okay, that happened this year.
Oh my
That's
gosh.
The same year I moved here.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I moved from Tampa back to Vegas, back to here. And I went through high school, and like all during this time, like even when I was a small kid, all I wanted to do was this. This was all I knew when
this
I was
radio.
Yeah. When I was a small kid living in New York, I would listen to BLI, our sister station, and that's what would put me to sleep. And I eventually went, okay, this is a cool job. And then when I got into high school, it kind of picked up more because, I mean, any time in middle school, you can't go, I want to be in radio, and nothing really ever happens from that.
Yeah.
So I eventually just started kind of following the industry and learning about it and stuff like that. And I did a – and I told you guys this when we went to my high school this past week or last week is, like, I – they have you do, like, a senior project. It takes the whole year. And I did – I was told, hey, you can't do yours on being in radio. And I said – awesome. I'm going to fucking do it on being in radio.
Oh.
I can see where throughout your history that we've gone through. Oh, a dancing queen. That you would have an issue with authority and also falling into line easily. So yeah. That makes sense because Jared was telling us while we were at his high school, by the way, that he was a damn troublemaker.
I was, mm-hmm. Yeah. I was a little bit of a hellion in high school, but it was, I mean, not as bad as some of the other people I was there with.
Good Lord.
But yeah, I was a little difficult to deal with and I have anger problems and I'm not as bad as I did. Or they were a lot worse then than they are now. And I think it's mostly because, I mean, I had a lot of animosity over what stuff that happened earlier on.
Well, mm-hmm. Because your life was sort of out of your control and you had no, and that's what, I mean, I've read so many parenting books upon becoming a parent because I like to try to be perfect. But like what I've learned is that kids need structure and yes. routine and they need to feel safe. And you had literally none of that.
I didn't. And it got worse my last year in high school because I remember I went my dad out to Daytona because that's where some of my other family lives. And I'm sitting in this pizza place with my dad and my uncle. My uncle is not the best character guy, former drug dealer, like just says whatever the hell he wants. And he says something that I never knew. And he goes, he says something about my mom having a miscarriage before I came along, which then in my head, because I have issues myself, go, why? Well, if that's what happened, why was she not a better parent towards me? Like, if she really wanted a kid that desperately, why was she such a fuck up?
Mm.
At least that's kind of the way I thought about it at the time right. when I was so angry at everything. So, I mean, that's kind of something that emotionally kind of got to me for a while.
Mm-hmm. As to, like, why your mom didn't do better because she had, like, a second chance with you.
Exactly, yeah. Why kind of squander a second chance?
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, that's kind of her makeup of, hey, I'm a little bit off
who
sometimes.
She is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Probably would have been the same crappy parent to the first kid.
No, true.
Exactly. Oh, and then I kind of left this part out at the very beginning. My mom... And this is like, I feel like the whole time I'm kind of just bashing her on this, but this is literally how everything goes. She had me in baby modeling when
what?
I was a kid. Yes.
You were a baby model?
I actually like to refer to myself as retired male model.
Oh my gosh.
Because.
That's awesome.
She.
Were
she
you
had
a
me-
Gerber baby?
Close.
Oh my gosh.
This is fantastic.
I actually won a competition. And I was in Billboard magazine as a kid. Yeah.
Do you have? I hope you're pulling up this picture.
I'm looking for the picture right now.
Praise Jesus! This is going to have to accompany the podcast.
Absolutely. If I could find it, which I know I have it.
That's amazing.
This is so interesting. We're learning so much about you, and so much of it is starting to sort of make sense about who you are as a person.
And I know, like you said, it kind of jumps around as I start to remember it. Because,
but that's your story.
Mm-hmm.
It jumps around.
I've tried to ignore a lot of it and not mm-hmm. really focus on stuff. And it sadly only gets worse.
Oh. Get your popcorn.
Geez, here we go.
Because Jared's life takes a turn.
Well, it does. Like once I graduated high school, like one of the things I wanted to do was radio. So I went to a technical school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through that, and probably about a month or two before I was set to graduate from there, which I didn't pay them all my money like I was supposed to.
Oh.
The place shut down.
And
we were on the news. It was like, where are these kids going to go? And at the time, I didn't know what to do. And I had already started an internship in this building over at 97X. And I remember getting told, hey, we're not learning today. You guys just go home. And they kind of
someone just walks in with a clipboard and they're like, students, we're not learning today. Go home.
What was that? What place?
Oh, it was the Connecticut School of Broadcasting.
Oh, I knew it.
Yeah, I've heard of them before.
Yeah, I've never heard a thing good about any of those schools of broadcasting. Can I tell you?
It's a tad shady.
I think a lot of them are.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And unfortunately, because if you want to be in this business, you think to yourself, this is a great, you know, leg in. It's a great foot in the door.
And that's the thing. That's all it really was to me because, I mean, you can learn stuff there. But the thing is, in this business, you relearn everything once you get here.
Yeah.
So, and I knew that if I didn't have an internship, or if I didn't have, if I wasn't going there to school, I wouldn't have an internship.
Right.
So I remember calling Danielle, who does mornings now on 97X, who was my superior at the time, and I went, "Hey, I don't have an, I don't have a school to go to now." And they went, "You know what? Screw it. We're not going to talk about it on air. Just keep coming in." And so that's what I did. And eventually it turned into getting hired on and stuff like that. And then once I was hired on, I ended up meeting this girl. And she was, like, hooking up my best friend at the time.
Oh. Wait,
no,
so
she
did
working
you...
working here?
I was working. No, she was not working here. She was just a, like a you server just... somewhere.
Oh, okay.
And was he working here?
He was not working here. No, okay. He was a server somewhere else. And I went, "You know what? Best friend, but sorry about you."
Oh, no, you did not put bros before hoes.
I did.
You did it the other way around.
I did.
You put hoes before bros.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
And we were together for a little while. And
like together, dating?
Yeah, absolutely. And
even though she was hooking up. So she wasn't dating your friend.
She stopped everything with him.
Right.
Did she tell him?
She did not tell him. And
does he know to this day that you two were together?
Yeah, and I actually talked to him yesterday of all things.
Oh.
We were not cool for a long time once he figured out what was going on and how everybody lied to him. And we were together for a little while. She was not the perfect person.
Do you regret doing that to your best friend?
I do, but I mean, we're good now. It was a bad bump in the road.
Yeah.
And I got what I deserved in the long run.
How so?
That's what I was about to say is we were good for a while. And I remember one day we went to a Rays game and her ex was there. I knew about this probably a little later into the game. And that night we go home, cause she's pretty much staying at my house like every now and then, left at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, "All right." I was half asleep and I go, "Hey, what's going on?" And she goes, "My brother's in the hospital. I got to go." I'm like, "All right, cool. And make sure he's all right." Because I knew the guy. He wasn't a bad dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was, and I didn't see her for about a week after that. I barely heard from her for a week after that.
And this whole week, did you think that she was at the hospital with her brother?
The first day, possibly.
And then what did you start to think?
After that, I kind of figured out what was going on because I started to put stuff back together from being at the baseball game. And so what she did, and unknown at this time to many people, was we were engaged at that point.
How long were you together before you proposed to this girl?
Probably 6 months.
And you were how old?
I was young and stupid, probably around 21. Actually, I was 20.
20.
Because
don't you just you feel so idealistic at 20?
You do.
And you're like, this
girl,
is forever.
Yeah, you
the
think
world
you know
is my thing. I know everything. I got it figured out.
You think you know what's going on and you don't. And then I realized what was happening and eventually heard from her and she told me what was happening.
What did she say?
That she had gotten back together with her ex and that that was the place that she wanted to be. So I was like, you know what? Cool. Works with me. And
did she give you back the ring, I hope?
Yes.
Oh, that's
which
good.
I threw into the Gulf of Mexico.
Jared, you could have at least gotten some money from that.
I mean, I probably could have. But
how much did you spend on it?
Not a ton, so I was fine with it.
Well, at 21, if it was
you don't
more
have
than,
money at 21. No.
I'm about to say at $100, that's everything at that moment.
I that's probably right where it was at. And
so, Jared, hold on. Let me stop you for a second.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Now, I know from the time that we've worked together now for 6 months,
I don't talk about this.
You don't talk about it, but you also don't talk about your emotions. I've seen you get angry twice.
Yeah.
I've never heard you express being hurt. What did it feel like when you got that phone call and she told you that she was going, that first off, she was cheating on you, second off, with her ex, and that third off, she was breaking off an engagement and going to stay with him? You said it was okay. You said whatever. But how did you feel?
And to be honest, I probably was like, whatever. Because, I mean, it wasn't a shock to me. I had an entire week to figure out what was going on.
But how did it feel when you figured it out?
Oh, I think you're absolutely hurt. I remember there was actually a time where I was pretty messed up about it within that week because I remember I was working here. I was doing overnights, just monitoring the stations. And I remember just one of the times I was able to get her on the phone, and I kind of questioned her about it. And I remember I was pretty upset about the stuff that was going on, and it – to me, it was like, this can't be happening. Like, you're seriously, you got to be messing with me right now.
Yeah.
Because
it feels like the rug gets pulled out from under you.
You do. And I mean, that's kind of how it was. And I understand what happened. And she's with the guy to this day. They're married. I know that.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. Yeah, they have a couple kids now. So, dang. I mean, all good on her. That's her deal. I mean, from what I've actually heard from people afterwards, like, yeah, she was a hoe. She did that to a couple other people. So,
really?
Yeah. So, I mean, it is what it is. You live and you learn. And I got what I deserved in the long run is the way I kind of looked at it. Me and this guy, Matt, we're friends now. So, I mean, it's good and it happened and I've moved on. I've moved past it. At the time, I didn't.
Of course not.
I had a nervous breakdown. I went into my boss's office. And I said, I quit. I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. I found another job, and I went up there to Georgia to work at Clear Channel, a place I always wanted to be because it was like that was one of the stations, like much like BLI, I always listened to. I was like, cool, I'm going to work at 96 Rock, the coolest station I thought there was at the time. Which, yeah, I mean, you know about it. Mm-hmm. And I was there. I met everybody. I actually made a really good friend that I eventually hooked back up with when I was here. Because he was doing mornings and I only met him like one time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, all right, cool. Let's, your paperwork's done. You're good to go. We just got to get it approved. And I never started a single day there.
Oh, so you just sat waiting?
I sat waiting and I eventually just lost my mind.
Why did they not bring you on?
They did. They were just waiting for like the approval and all that other stuff, I guess, from corporate.
And it never came through?
No, it probably did come through, but I eventually had to sit an entire week. And during that week was my birthday, my 21st birthday. And I remember I was going with this one person who was like, hey, guess what? This is your friend. You have no friends here right now. This person's going to be your friend pretty much.
Right.
And he was already over 21. He was probably 24 at the time. So we're at a bar, and we get there probably around 10 o'clock. I can't drink till midnight, so like... Even the bartender decided he was going to F with me a little bit and goes, guess what? You have to sit outside until midnight. So I literally sat outside by myself for 2 hours on my birthday. I think it was right then and there that I went, you know what? I got to go back. I got to go back home. So I loaded up my car the next day. I went to the Clear Channel office. I walked up to Tom White and I was like, you know, I can't do this, man. I'm going to go back to Tampa. And that was another situation that kind of worked out well. Within like a year or two, they flipped to Power 96, a station I probably wouldn't have been working at. I would have had a van. I was like, they wanted me to be Tom White's number two person. So much like, hey, Vander, that's here. That's kind of what they wanted me to do there. And which to me would have been awesome. I would have been running the streets on a station that I thought was super cool. So I came back here. The boss that I walked into his office said I quit. He's like, yeah, you got to hold off now. So six months later.
Oh, so you had to just wait?
Yeah, I had to wait.
I'll be honest with you. If somebody came in and like literally gave no notice and was like, I quit, and then they were like, okay, I don't quit, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Sit your ass down is what you do.
Oh, my God. So what did you do for those 6 months?
I probably bounced around. I had small jobs that I did. I worked with my dad here and there out in Orlando because he was still in the trade show industry. And they brought me back, and things were good. I was bored out for a while. And then I had my car accident, and where we've talked about it here before. I was driving down a road in Pasco about 2 o'clock in the morning. Guy came out in front of me, hit his bike, and he died right there. Mm-hmm. So nervous breakdown continues, pretty much.
So were you still reeling from the girl that...
I wasn't. I was. My depression was pretty bad. But no, I had moved on from all that. So, and this was a little while afterwards. So I think I was better off. And then this brought everything back to the forefront. Let's see. Actually, no, there was something before that. Like I said, it jumps around a little bit.
That's fine.
Because it's sketchy. But yeah, like the guy passed away. And my first phone call was again to Danielle, who, much like when the school thing happened, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know what? Let me just quit before this makes the news because I'm caring more about you guys than my.
And this is Danielle from 97X.
My biggest thing was it was going to end up on Fox 13. Hey, person that works at 97X, in accident. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this to them. I'm done.
So you quit?
No, I talked to her about it, and she's like, you know what? Talk to Shark, who was our boss at the time, and I told him, and he's like, you know what? We're going to work through it. You're good. You're not quitting.
Wow.
So I was like, all right, cool. And so that happened. But before that, I almost died.
How?
I was doing while I was working at 97X, I had flown out to Vegas to see my dad, because he got flown out there to do some work. Mm-hmm. And I was working with him, and he was cutting carpet, and I was doing the same thing, and I wasn't really paying attention, and he got me in the wrist.
Ooh, oh no.
With a knife, and I was... Yeah.
Did he cut sideways or long ways?
Sideways.
Oh.
Yeah.
That helps. I mean, that helps you stay alive.
No, it will. It does.
Yeah. If you do it long ways, then that's when you bleed out quicker.
You did.
Yeah. And
I watched TV too. I
still have the scar on my arm to prove it and everything. And I remember just losing a lot of blood because we were in a spot that was really far from all the exits.
Mm.
So I was fading a little bit. And I just remember being rushed through the place. My dad's freaking out. We're running through the convention hall with me on like a stretcher. And they eventually like have ambulance there, and they load me up in it, and it was awkward. Like, I had tattoos at the time, and I remember the guy saying to me, "Hey, we're gonna stick you with this needle," and I'm like fading a little bit, and I was like, "I don't like needles."
And they were like, "Shut up."
And that's really what he did. He's like, "But you have tattoos." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's different."
But it's not. It's probably less painful.
It's a lot less painful. Yes. And I remember trying to make my dad feel better. And I remember saying a line that he's always like that. I've heard him say to people, and I'm like, "Hey, I'm good. This is too far from my heart to kill me." And the next thing I know, I'm in the hospital. I'm kind of just sitting there. They close everything up and. And that was that. And I remember I was stuck in then Vegas for like another week and a half.
And when was that? Was that after the car accident?
This was way before the car accident.
Oh, before the
This was before the car accident.
Oh.
So we'll jump back now.
Okay.
So now we're after the car accident.
This is after the car accident.
After Shark said, "You can't quit."
I can't quit. So I was working here for a little while, and that's when the bone switched to all talk.
How well I remember that in the trades, don't you?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Holly and I were here in Tampa at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I had a demo put together to do, I wanted overnights on the bone before it flipped all talk, and it was classic rock.
Mm-hmm.
So I handed my demo. They're like, "Awesome, cool, thank you." Them blatantly knowing that, hey, guess what? We're going to throw this to the side because we're going all talk in 3 days.
Right. They're like, "Thanks, but no thanks, little boy."
Yeah, which I mean, I was a board up at the time. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Well, no, yeah.
Yeah. So they go, I guess it made some sort of impression because they go, "Hey, we're bringing this guy Spice in from the Bubble Love Sponge show."
Oh.
And I was like, "Okay, cool." But they're like, "He doesn't know the board here," which is true because he hadn't worked in this building. And they're like, "We want you to do that." And I never taught him the board. They brought me in. He's like, "Guess what? You're going to be my phone screener. Just sit tight." And I did that. And then I stuck around. And I mean, I did stupid stunts. It was an interesting time.
So this was like your first... Even though you were still being paid part time,
this was my first.
But this
real
was
radio
your
gig.
First like real. I'm a member of a full show.
Yes.
How was it?
It was. I'll tell you this. He put me through shit.
Mm.
But I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world. I love the guy to death, and I still do.
Now, when you say he put you through shit, was it? Do you think
intern wise? I mean, he did everything he could to get the best audio he possibly could. I mean, he had me shave one whole half of my face, and I literally mean half of my face.
Oh, no.
And stay like that for a week.
Like, why is radio... This is why radio is the lowest form of media, because we make our people do stupid shit.
But the thing is, like, I wanted to be just like him. I wanted to be there, so I was like, you know what, let's do all this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the day came, a couple days before my birthday, I'm sitting in the office, it was a Monday, and I'm getting audio ready for the show, and my boss walks in, Shark, again, because he was then running that station too, walks in, and he's in a suit because he had meetings earlier in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks into the room, closes the door, and goes, "Hey, man, I'm going to have you go home today.
Oh.
Don't really tell anybody what's going on right now. And he's like, I've already talked to Matt, Spice. He's being let go." And I went, "Okay, what does that do?" And even before I can finish that, he's like, just finish what you're doing, go home." And I went, "All right." And I was already upset at the time because I knew, fuck, this is my first gig. We've only been here a year and a half, and we're done. And ratings were, we were number one at the time. And, I mean, I got a little upset, and he went, you know what? Just take it all in. Come back in a couple days.
Come back in a couple days?
Yeah. Because we weren't, me and one of the other guys on the show, Gio, who's on the bone as well, we weren't fired. Only Matt was fired.
So now, looking back at that, why do you think he was fired? If ratings were great, you were number one, what happened? Why did he get fired? Why are you hesitating?
There's stuff I think I could say, and there's stuff I think I can't say. And I mean this for the sake of you guys, of why I can't say stuff. Which I'll probably tell you once we're done with this.
Somebody better tell us some shit right now.
Like, I want to know, girl.
So, I mean, that all happened. And I, once we got let go, I went back to board hopping. It was like, okay, at least I still got a job.
Right.
And then they put me, or actually I got angry again. And I saw somebody get an opportunity that I was like, wow, that I don't get that. And I listened to their radio show for about a half hour on a Sunday night, and I was pissed. I was mad.
Was it someone in this building?
It's actually someone that I'm super friends with now, and I talk to all the time. Kayla. Kayla was given an opportunity to work with a cat named Mo. And I went, this is bullshit. Why is she getting this opportunity over me? So I put together a podcast, and I did that for a while, and it started to pick up traction. It was going great. It was working. And it caught some attention here. And then they were like, hey, we're taking Kayla off of this. We're going to put you there. And I was like, okay, cool. So we started doing just doing a Saturday show. And then it turned into, hey, guess what? You're going to do nights now.
Again.
So I went back to the place I was at, which I was comfortable doing. And it worked. It worked for a while until I realized, this sucks.
And when you say this, what is this?
Your work situation?
My work situation wasn't great, and not for nothing. I mean, it's the show's still on. I guess they're doing well since I left to come over here, but it wasn't
the right fit for you.
It wasn't the right fit for me. I would say this to the guy, even if it came down to it, is much like your situation with Steven or Kramer. Is you eventually realize this is not someone you could work with all the time.
Right.
And me and Mo got into a very heated argument on air, and I lost all respect for him at that point as a radio person. I mean, we're fine now, and I think that's because I don't work there. But
do you respect him as a radio person now, or was it just in that moment where you just sort of...
In that moment,
in the
I would...
In the moment.
In that moment, and even after that moment until I came here, I rather had worked at Dairy Queen than been in that room for 3 hours a day with him.
Do you want to say what the argument was about?
Oh, no, I absolutely will, because it happened on air, and it got ugly, and it got real ugly. When a curse word is said on the air, from the standpoint of a producer, you kind of give emotion, even if the host realizes it or not, that the curse word happened, of, hey, you need to dump this. So I gave him the motion of, hey, you need to dump this, on what could have been a judgment call. And so I didn't say on air, hey, dump that.
Right.
And he got pissed. He flew off the handle at me about it.
Because you didn't say dump this?
Because I didn't
say it. Just because you made the hand signal.
Because I made the hand signal. Because if I said it and he didn't dump it, then I look real stupid on air for saying that.
Right.
So that happened, and he berated me on air. And then berated me off air. And then when we came back. I went, you know what? Fuck this guy. I don't want to be here. I don't respect you as a radio personality. And I'm done.
And you said this on the air?
I never told him I lost respect for him. This is the first time I've said that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, probably to close people I said that, but I never said that to anybody that worked here. Just for that ever getting back to him. And I mean, he understands that there was a lot of bad stuff that happened at one point. And then two nights later, the next day, Drew Garabo, who does Afternoons on the Bone, brought me in. Had me talk about it. They played the audio.
This is what they do on The Bone, by the way.
Of course.
If anything happens on any of the shows that is in the least bit incendiary, every other show will then capture the audio and play it.
Yeah. Mo berated me again on air. Mm. And then I was filling in for him because he had a gig that night. So it was me and some other people that normally aren't in the room. And we did his show, the BDRS. And the only thing people wanted to talk about was what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
So I did what any smart radio personality would do. I took the calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, hey, I don't hate Mo. It's a bad situation. Let's just move past it. And he calls the hotline.
Oh, jeez.
And berates me again.
And this is on the air, off the air?
On the air.
Oh, gosh.
Berates me again for taking the calls and says, you know what? I'll leave the gig I'm at right now and come back in that studio if you take another call.
Oh, my God.
And what I do? I took another call. He wasn't leaving.
Damn.
It was money. He wasn't going to leave it.
Right.
So after that, we go to break. I give it up. We do the rest of the regular show. But from that moment on, I did not want to be on that show another second longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was June. So from June to October.
June of 2015.
June of 2015 to October when I was over at the Publix right by your house. And I'm going there and picking my girlfriend up lunch to bring to work. And I get a call going, hey, this is Miguel.
And I was like, ooh, who called you at Publix?
Yeah. I feel like in Jared's head, he's like, what fresh hell is this? Who the hell is this Miguel character? What?
Oh, my gosh.
This was September, actually, of 2015. Mm-hmm. I get a call saying, hey, this is Miguel. And I'm starting to talk, and the line goes dead.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know what's happening here, but I know something's up.
Mm.
So as soon as I get outside of the Publix, they give you a call back, and you ask me, would you be interested in coming to the show? Nikki, our producer, is leaving, and I go, yeah, I'm 110% interested in the position. It gets me out of the hellhole I'm in, which I didn't say to you, but that's really what it was. They could have been like, hey, do you want to mop the floors at Goodwill with a toothbrush? And be like, yes, it gets me out of the hellhole I'm in.
Do it!
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I sat in with a couple days with Nikki. You guys didn't have me on air. It was just learning what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, okay, Nikki's moving to this show. We're going to bring you here. And I had tickets already to a concert that was up in Atlanta for over a year. Like, a concert was announced, and it was like, this is happening a year from now. Buy your tickets. I was like, all right, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all that planned out, hotel and everything. I go to this concert. It ends at 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday.
Mm.
We're on air at 6 a.m. I was in the studio at 6:03 on my first day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything started from there.
Right.
And the show was like, there was the show. It was like, this is what's happening. I finally made it two mornings after every single person I've ever run into said, no, you can't do this. You'll never make it. My mom on my 21st birthday said, he's wasting his fucking time.
Mm.
And I was like, you know what? I did it. I'm here. And then stuff's going, the show's going, everything's going fine. And I, before I left the night show on the Bone, I reached out to a place in Colorado that was looking for a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to the guy, the GM, I talked to him, and he's like, cool, we like you. And I never heard anything back. I was like, oh, that's nice of him. Mm-hmm. I appreciate being liked.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing mornings now, and I get a call from the guy again going, hey, we're interested.
Mm.
We want to hear more stuff from you. So on the side, I'm still doing the show, but I'm also now putting stuff together to do a morning show in Colorado.
Right.
Now, you eventually did tell us about this.
I did.
Were you nervous to tell us?
I was. I wasn't sure how you guys would take that.
Did you think I'd punch you in the face?
I figured you would be mad, but I think this was also coming off the heels of somebody else doing that in this building and not telling anybody either, and it went horrible.
Right.
Well, that's a different show than we are, though.
It is, but the thing is, I was still new.
Yeah.
The way you guys do everything on air, it's like, we're happy. I didn't know once Miguel gets home if he's punching cats in the face or not. So I was like, okay, I'm not really sure what's going to happen if I tell them everything that's going on.
Sometimes he's a cat puncher, I guess. I don't know. I think we just like to know what's happening.
So yeah, and I told you guys what was going on, and they made me an offer. And this is something that we've never talked about, and only a few people knows. Yeah, I was given an offer to make double what I'm making now in Colorado. And I was like, cool, I'm going to have my own morning show. And they go, not so fast.
No.
It was originally, yes, you would have had your own morning show, but guess what? Now we're bringing in a syndicated show instead.
Mm. Yeah.
And we want you to run the board for that, and your mic will be on at all times. Don't worry. And I was like, okay, that's weird. And I told you guys about it, and I reached out to Chet Buchanan in Las Vegas. I reached out to Drew Garabo here, and then I finally reached out to a guy that I have more respect for than almost anybody, a guy named Jason Bailey, who was known as Buckethead when he was in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him what was going on.
He's real cute, by the way.
Yeah, he's really attractive.
Just FYI.
Actually, I just stalked his Instagram the other day.
Did you? Following him. In fact, I forgot he existed for a moment. By the time we ran into him at BitFest one time, I was like, how you doing?
Oh, hi.
Anyway. Neither here nor there.
Well, I talked to this guy that you guys think is super cute about everything, and we talked for a while, and we were at a gig. We were hosting, we were the Lightning social captains, and I'm disappearing in a bathroom talking to a morning show guy going, do I leave? Do I go to Colorado? What am I doing?
Yeah.
And he tells me, you know what? No, you stay there. Mm-hmm. You do what you're doing. This isn't a good opportunity for you. And I went, all right, cool, done deal. And as soon as I walked out of the bathroom, I walked up to you guys and I went, you know what? I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
And so I turned down that, an offer that eventually turned into them bringing a syndicated show out of Seattle. And I was like, wow.
Like, that wouldn't have worked out.
There's not a chance in hell my mic would ever be on.
No.
So, Jared, what do you want to eventually do in radio? Because I have a feeling that being an executive producer of a morning show like what we do probably isn't on your, like, what you want to do for the rest of your career.
Your list of potential, like, amazing careers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I'll say that.
You hate me?
I don't hate you.
Okay,
you
don't see me die. Do that. This do not. This is an open
me.
Space of a trust
you want
tree.
To punch me in
Shit.
My dick?
What?
No. This is what I'll tell you, and this might warm a little bit. I want to be the Jeff Dollar to your Burt Weiss, is the way I kind of look at stuff.
Oh.
Wait, guess what? He has his own show now doing mornings, which just started. But
you're going to betray me one day.
Okay. Eventually I am, and you're going to be very angry about it. But
yeah.
I think to me that's what I want to do. I do want to have my own program. That's not I think for any of us in radio, when you get the bug, you go, guess what? That's what I want to do.
You want
to have that notoriety and everything. And I'm not going to lie, that is what I want to do. I did it for a little bit on the bone, and I enjoyed it, and it worked. And I was like, people are listening to what I have to talk about, which is fantastic, and that's what everybody wants. I think that is the eventual goal.
Are you willing to, because you were willing to potentially move to Colorado, are you willing to move for it?
I am. It's one of those things. I mean, Tampa is it's a difficult market, and you don't get handed your first show in a big market. That rarely happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if it ever came down to it, I'd have to.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Interesting. That's so fascinating because, you know, you sit in the studio with someone for 4 hours every day and you know, we do get to know each other, but in the midst of all the stuff that we have to do, you don't truly, truly get to know someone until you get to know what is it that sort of makes that person you. And so it's interesting to sort of see. And also because your name, they used to call you on 97X.
I can explain that.
Yeah, and 102.5 The Bone, Nervous Jared. That's what most people in Tampa Bay that don't listen to Hot 101.5 know you as.
Yeah, and I mean, I still walk around now and people are like, Nervous Jared. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? How are you? And the way that all came about is I was an intern on the Morning X where Danielle was, where Seth was, and Chris Fisher. And I don't know. I never noticed that I was like that. But we eventually had a guest on, a comedian, Christopher Titus. And he goes, what's with the weird kid? Like, he even says that on air, I think. And they go, Chris Fisher goes, yeah, that's our intern. He doesn't know this, but we call him Nervous Jared. And I mean, that time at 8:30 in the morning on some random Preble Tuesday, it stuck and it never went away.
That's how nicknames happen.
It is. So then Nervous Jared has been your name forever.
It has, and I started a podcast recently. I brought back the one I had, and it used to be called the Nervous Jared Show, and that's even what it was when I had my show on the bone. And I started this podcast off by going, guess what? No, I'm not. We're not calling it that anymore.
Mm.
I'm trying to move away from it. It doesn't work where we're at. And two, I've grown a lot since then. So.
I think that when you people get nicknames in radio, when you start out as an intern, I always encourage talent, don't stick to that. Because you don't want to be 45 years old walking around,
exactly,
going into a business with, you know, clients who are going to spend a lot of money in a radio station and say, "Hi, I'm Nervous Jared."
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
You're like, you want to say, "My name is Jared Day." Like, yeah, you want to go in. And that's because I'm saying this as a person who had a dumbass radio name, a Spanish Michael, when I was in college in my first year of full-time radio. And so that's why I'm like, don't let that name stick to you.
Yeah, thank God I never had one.
You, Holly, what would your name would have been?
I don't know. Something about how I was like friggin' rainbows and sunshine and like the spirit leader all the damn time.
Rainbow Holly.
Probably. Probably would have been Rainbow Holly. I guarantee it. Like, especially if Dave Crosser, who was my mentor, was in charge of it, that would have been what it would.
Producer Jared, real quick before we start to wrap this up.
Sure.
Because this is about you, but I'm curious as we're talking about sort of how you came to us and, you know, what got you here. Honestly, what was your perception after sitting in the studio with us for 2 days and sort of seeing how our show operates behind the scenes,
sure,
and what you heard on the air? Because I don't know if you ever listened to us when you, you know, before you came to work with us.
Well, before I came along, the only thing I heard from you guys was your final break in Panama City.
Oh.
Where?
Oh God.
That's
God.
The only thing I heard, and like
crying,
that was tears, and
emotion.
The thing is, like, yeah, there were emotions. I remember the last talk you guys had with Mandy, and then the only thing I honestly remember, like, I don't remember anything you guys said, but I remember thank you for being a friend. Ended the show. And that's.
Oh my God. We're the corniest sometimes.
No, that was actually fantastic.
And like you, I'm kind of like a radio like nerd or junkie. Like I'm like, these guys are ending their show. I want to know how this ends. Like, or like somebody starts a show. I want to know how this starts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to know these kind of things. And I remember that. And that's before I even knew you guys were coming here, I think it was.
Mm.
Or it might have been around the same time that I heard you guys were coming here, because I knew like you guys were in talks to come here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I knew there was two people that I knew they were talking to or about, and it was you guys. And it was a guy named, I think, Chad, that was in Memphis. Now he does middays in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That's all I knew. So I knew a little bit of you guys, but I never heard any of the show until, like, thank you for being a friend. That's
and you're like, what in the hell?
Which pretty much sums up, like, yes, who we are as people. Like, yeah. I love a good corny moment with a good song.
Yeah. So I wasn't surprised when I walked in there, and you guys were very upbeat about stuff. So, I mean, to me, it was like, this is a different element. I was coming from a place where there were the host hated the co-host, and the co-host hated the host, and the producer hated the host, and there were text messages that would go on during the show between people going, "We hate this guy." Like,
oh my gosh,
that's literally what would happen in that room. And then the phone screener would text going, "I seriously hate this guy. I'm
oh
gonna
my
choke
God.
Him."
Oh my,
I can't imagine working in an environment like that.
It was the worst possible environment you could ever be in. And I was like, this is a relief. Like, these people like each other.
Yeah. No, we genuinely do. It's weird.
So I was happy to finally be where I want to be, but also be around people that also wanted to be there.
That does make a difference.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Well, look at that. The prologue to Producer Jared, a.k.a. Jared Day.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff I left out, but I mean, that's a lot of the big stuff, except for, like, I ever talk about my depression and stuff like that, which I'm very open about. I have it, blah, mm-hmm. blah. I help. I threw together a charity to help other people with it, like, because I want to make a difference. So, yeah, that's it. That's all the stuff.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's Producer Jared. It's really
that felt like an hour.
That was actually an hour.
Ugh.
It's actually been exactly 1 hour.
Wow.
Exactly 1 hour. That was good stuff. Was interesting, like I said, to get to know who you are, and it helps me sort of understand sort of where you're coming from and how you approach things, and especially with you moving around so much when you were young, that affects you a lot.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, and this is something I left out. A lot of people notice this. I am very quiet a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I have that written down here of why. It's, and I think I said this, my stepdad didn't like me very much. And that was blatantly obvious and kind of he only referred to me as boy for a long time.
Oh.
So it was one of those things like, well, I'm not going to talk. And I didn't have many friends and all this other stuff. And that's what eventually led to going, I'm not going to say anything. And to this day, I'm very quiet. My girlfriend brings me around her family, and I don't say a single word to them. They all think I probably hate them.
Probably. Probably so.
Yeah, I'm honestly one of those speak when spoken to people, because that's how I was brought up. So,
wow. Well,
yeah,
you can speak whenever you want to. You can speak whenever you want to. You can come in my bosom, okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, well, give it up. Producer Jared, his prologue.
I'm sweating right now.
I know. That's a lot. I mean, it's literally like we just put you through like an FBI quiz.
Well,
so
I'm also wearing a hoodie and it's kind of hot, but I am really sweating.
But aside from that, it's a lot to go through that quickly.
It is. It is under our watchful gaze. Well, yeah. Next week, Holly O'Connor gets to see.
I'm sorry. I'm feeling very well today, but I was riveted by Jared's.
I don't know if it's riveting at all. But
no, it wasn't.
I never lost interest at all.
Okay.
No.
I would never lost interest. I just really was curious to know your backstory.
Yeah, it's a lot of my mom's. Like, I mean, I could sum the whole hour up in about 30 seconds. My mom's nuts. I love radio. And I'm no longer on a show that I didn't like anymore.
So, he's like, there we go. Praise the Lord.
Yep.
We could have done that whole thing in about 20 seconds.
But no, but I love it. It was great. Well, Holly O'Connor, you're next week, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, producer Jared, what is all of your social media?
It is Nervous Jared on Twitter, producer Jared on Snapchat, and also, yeah, Nervous Jared as well on Instagram.
Holly O'Connor.
Radio Holly for all.
Mine is Miguel, MIGUELFULLER, on Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. See you next week. Bye.